I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is July 1st, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. For the entire history of our species, one thing has stayed fixed. To create a human egg, you needed a human body. That was the rule, biology's oldest, most non-negotiable constraint. Today, that rule cracked. Scientists have coaxed ordinary human cells into becoming the earliest form of a human egg. Not harvested, not donated, built from scratch, in a dish, starting from skin. The technique has a name that sounds almost clinical, in vitro gametogenesis. But sit with what it actually means. The starting material for the next generation, reprogrammed from the cells you shed without thinking. This is early, it is fragile, and it raises questions we have never had to answer before. So today we trace the science of how you turn a skin cell into the spark of a life, the precise moment the biology bends, and the questions that arrive the instant it does. The front page. Here's what's moving through the technology stack today. Story 1. Fusion crosses a quiet threshold. Rialta Fusion out of Wisconsin powered a light bulb. That sounds trivial until you understand where the electricity came from. Not a steam turbine. Directly from the fusion plasma itself. Here's the mechanism. In deuterium-tritium fusion, about 20% of the energy leaves as charged helium nuclei, alpha particles moving at high speed. Rialta strapped a converter to the end of its WEM device and caught that charge as current. Multiple amps at 100 volts. Now, here's why it matters. Efficiency. Steam turbines in today's fission reactors convert about 33% of energy into electricity. Direct conversion? Furlong claims 90%. The whole game in fusion right now is producing more energy than you consume, and a jump like that makes clearing that line dramatically easier. They call it recirculating the electricity. Spinning a flywheel. Huion, the Sam Altman-backed startup, is betting on the same physics. It just hasn't shown it publicly yet. Rialta may be first. Story 2. And it connects directly to the first. Because the problem with electricity is you have to move it, and the grid leaks. Arcturus, emerging from stealth with an $8 million seed round, is infusing carbon nanomaterials into copper and aluminum using lasers. The physics is simple. Copper loses conductivity as it heats. Hotter wire? More energy wasted. Reduce that heat loss and the same power line carries more current. Arcturus claims it can halve grid losses, unlocking roughly 3% more electricity on average, up to 10% when the grid is most congested. Notice the pattern here. Both of these stories are about efficiency, not generation. As AI and electrification overload the grid, the winners may not be the ones making more power, but the ones losing less of it. Story 3. The agentic AI price war goes public. Anthropic launched Claude Sonnet 5. The pitch isn't raw capability, it's cost. Performance approaching their flagship Opus 4.8 at $2 per million input tokens. Read the signal, not the announcement. OpenAI, Google, Anthropic. Every recent release is framed the same way. Models that plan, use tools, run autonomously. Agentic behavior is no longer the differentiator. It's the baseline. The new battleground is who delivers it cheapest and how reliably it runs without a human watching. Story 4. And this is the infrastructure those agents run on. AWS launched Lambda Micro VMs. Each user session or AI agent gets its own firecracker virtual machine, hardware-level isolation, near-instant launch from a memory snapshot, and state that persists up to 8 hours. The problem it solves is untrusted code. When your application runs code a developer never wrote, AI-generated code, user submissions, you used to face a trade-off. Virtual machines are secure, but slow to boot. Containers are fast, but share a kernel. This collapses that trade-off into one primitive. Now connect 3 and 4, cheaper agents plus isolated execution environments. The industry is building both the workers and the sandboxes to contain them at the same time. Tesla removes the steering wheel. The Cybercab is testing in Austin with no pedals and no steering wheel, just a safety monitor in the passenger seat. Nearly 2 years after the design reveal, but the real story is regulatory. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration just proposed dropping the brake pedal mandate for vehicles designed to be driven exclusively by automated systems. That's the hurdle clearing. Tesla's bet against Waymo is vertical control. Building the car and the software. Cameras only, no LiDAR. Waymo's sensor-heavy approach still hits edge cases. No highways, trouble with floods and school buses. Neither has fully cracked it. But the pedals coming off is a statement of intent. And here's the pattern across all five. The industry is quietly rebuilding its foundations. Cleaner energy, tighter grids, cheaper agents, safer sandboxes, driverless frames. Less spectacle, more plumbing.
The deep dive. Let's talk about a number that doesn't add up, and why that's actually the interesting part. Last week, at its 2026 Investor Day, Qualcomm made a claim about its upcoming data center accelerator. The AI250 card, they said, will deliver 133 terabytes per second of memory bandwidth.
To put that in perspective, NVIDIA needs 8 stacks of the most expensive memory money can buy to approach that figure. Qualcomm says it can do it with commodity phone memory. That claim is almost certainly not what it sounds like, but buried underneath the marketing, there's a genuinely clever piece of architecture. And it points at the single biggest problem in AI infrastructure today. So let's dig in. The wall everyone is hitting. Here's the frame. For the last decade, we've obsessed over compute, teraflops, how many multiply add operations a chip can do per second. But somewhere along the way, the bottleneck moved. The problem now isn't doing the math, it's feeding the math. Modern AI inference, running a large language model to generate a response, is overwhelmingly a memory-bound workload. Every token you generate requires reading the entire model's weights out of memory. Billions of parameters streamed across the chip, over and over. This is what people call the memory wall. Your compute units sit there, idle, waiting for data to arrive. And moving that data isn't just slow. It's expensive, and the one currency that actually matters in a data center now, power. Here's a fact that reframes everything. On a modern graphics processing unit, a GPU, moving a piece of data from memory to the compute die can cost more energy than the actual computation performed on it. Read that again. The transport costs more than the work. We've built machines where the commute is more expensive than the job. That is the problem Qualcomm is aiming at. And their answer has a name: high bandwidth compute, HBC. What Qualcomm is actually building. The conventional approach looks like this. You have your compute dies in the center. Around them, you place stacks of high bandwidth memory, HBM, connected through an expensive silicon bridge called an interposer. Taiwan Semiconductor's CoWoS packaging is the dominant version. Data shuttles back and forth across that bridge, millions of times a second. Qualcomm's idea is to collapse that distance. Instead of placing memory next to the compute, they stack layers of DRAM directly on top of the compute die. And then, this is the key move, they push some of the computation up underneath the memory. The processing happens right where the data lives. This is near memory compute. The principle is simple and old. If moving data is what costs you, then don't move the data. Move the work to the data instead. When the electrons travel micrometers instead of millimeters, the energy cost of each transfer drops dramatically. Tony Pialis, Qualcomm's data center lead, framed it this way. He claimed they get the performance of SRAM, the fast, expensive on-chip memory, with the density and capacity of HBM stacks. That's the pitch. Speed of the small stuff, capacity of the big stuff. Now, the card specs. 768 gigabytes of memory capacity. That part is plausible. Stack enough layers of low-power DDR memory, and you get real capacity. Capacity is the easy claim. Where the number breaks, here's where we separate signal from noise. That headline bandwidth figure, the 133 terabytes per second, rests entirely on one word: effective, not physical, effective. Let's do the arithmetic, because this is where it gets revealing. For their current generation AI200 system, Qualcomm claimed 414 terabytes per second across 56 chips. To physically achieve that with the memory they're using, 8800 megatransfer per second low power DDR, you would need a memory bus roughly 6,700 bits wide. That is not a bus any known chip possesses. It's off by an enormous margin. So what's the trick? When Qualcomm says the AI250 offers 18 times the effective bandwidth of the previous generation, and the AI300 will offer 54 times, those multipliers aren't measuring raw data transfer. They're a property of the near-memory architecture itself. If your compute sits underneath the memory, and you're processing data in place, you never had to move it across the traditional bottleneck at all. So you count the bandwidth you would have needed on a conventional design to achieve the same result. You're not moving more bits faster. You're moving fewer bits, shorter distances, and reporting the equivalent. Is that dishonest? Not exactly. Is it comparable to NVIDIA's physical HBM bandwidth numbers? Absolutely not. It's an apples-to-architecture comparison. And when Qualcomm was asked for specifics on how the physical interface hits these figures, they declined to explain. That silence tells you which number is real. Why this matters anyway? Here's the thing. Even after you strip out the marketing, the underlying idea is sound. And that's what makes this worth your attention. The economics of inference are brutal right now. Every major AI company is bleeding money on the cost of serving models. The bottleneck is memory bandwidth and the power to drive it. If Qualcomm's near-memory approach genuinely cuts the energy cost of data movement, even by a meaningful fraction, that changes the unit economics of running a model. Not the peak performance, the cost per token. And cost per token is the number that decides who survives this era. Qualcomm is also playing a different game than NVIDIA. They're not chasing training. Training needs raw flops and flexibility. Qualcomm is aiming squarely at inference, the steady-state workload of actually serving AI to users. That market is larger, and it's more sensitive to efficiency than to peak speed. It's a smart place to attack from behind. And they're not alone in reading the board this way. The pattern across the ecosystem, step back, and you see the same story told four different ways this week. Qualcomm buries compute under the memory to dodge the data movement tax. Meta, facing DDR5 memory prices at record highs, built a custom chip called Vistara. Its purpose? To pull decade-old DDR4 memory out of decommissioned servers and bolt it onto brand new machines using an interconnect standard called CXL, Compute Express Link. They're recycling garbage memory to escape a supply crunch. Cold data goes to the slow, cheap recovered tier. Hot data stays local. It's the memory wall problem, solved with a dumpster and a clever controller. And then, the most human signal of all. Companies are installing a plugin that forces tools like Claude and Codex to answer like cavemen. Short, blunt, Hulk smash, instead of a paragraph of pleasantries. Why? Because every token costs money, and verbose AI is torching budgets. See the pattern? At every single layer of the stack, the silicon, the server rack, the words the model speaks, the industry has hit the same wall. The frontier is no longer capability. The frontier is efficiency. It's cost. It's the physics and the economics of moving information around. Qualcomm's inflated bandwidth number is, in a strange way, the perfect symbol of this moment. Everyone is straining so hard against the cost of AI that even a promising architecture gets wrapped in a figure that can't quite be true. So here's what I'll be watching. Not the marketing multipliers. When these AI 250 racks ship next year, I want to see one number. Measured, not modeled. Power consumed per token generated. If near-memory compute delivers there, Qualcomm won't need the inflated bandwidth claim at all. The real number will speak for itself. And that's the tell for this whole era. The winners won't be whoever computes fastest. They'll be whoever moves the least to get the most done. The neural network. I'm tracking a pattern this week that sits at the intersection of speed and trust. And it's telling me something about where the security model of artificial intelligence, AI, is heading. Let me start with a story that stopped me. Researchers at a security firm called LayerX demonstrated an attack on AI browsers. Not a memory corruption, not a stolen key, a conceptual attack. The malicious website presents the browser's embedded language model with a game. Solve the puzzle to win. But the puzzle rewards wrong answers. 2 + 2 = 5. And once the model accepts that the rules of arithmetic no longer hold, it accepts that none of the other rules hold either. Here's the mechanism. Because the mechanism is the whole story. A large language model, an LLM, has no hard boundary between the instructions it follows and the data it reads. It's all just tokens flowing through the same context window. The safety guardrails are not a firewall. They're a belief. A belief that the situation is real and consequences are real. The attack doesn't break the guardrail. It convinces the model it's dreaming. And in the dream, it exfiltrates your private repository and drains your password manager. Because in a fantasy, nothing has consequences. Sit with that. The exploit is not technical in the traditional sense. It's epistemic. You're not hacking the code. You're hacking the model's sense of what's true. And this matters because it exposes the root design flaw. The industry's response to LLM risk has been reactive. A growing block list of forbidden requests. Don't build the exploit, don't teach the pipe bomb, don't steal the credential. But a block list assumes the model always knows which reality it's operating in. This attack proves it doesn't. You're treating symptoms while the patient's grip on reality is the actual vulnerability. Now watch how the second data point rhymes. Apple shipped 29 security patches ahead of schedule. Most were memory safety bugs in WebKit, the engine that renders web content not just in Safari, but inside almost any app that opens a link. Reachable almost everywhere, none exploited yet. So why the rush? Apple told Reuters the answer directly: AI. Attackers are using AI to accelerate the development of exploits, and the old timeline, announce a fix, ship it weeks later, is now a gift to anyone with a model that can weaponize the disclosure faster than users can patch. Connect the two. In the first story, AI is the target, a system that can be tricked into betraying you. In the second, AI is the weapon, a system that compresses the window between a bug becoming public and that bug becoming a working attack. Same technology, standing on both sides of the fight. InfoSec professionals are cooling on fully autonomous pen testing tools. A year ago, 29% were open to it. Now, just 9%. That's not a small drift. That's practitioners who work with these systems every day, pulling back, precisely because they understand what the first two stories demonstrate. An autonomous agent you can't fully reason about is an agent an adversary might reason about for you. So here's the pattern I'm seeing across all three points. The old security model had a clean boundary, trusted code on one side, untrusted input on the other. AI dissolves that boundary. The browser story shows untrusted input rewriting the agent's reality. The Apple story shows untrusted attackers accelerating faster than trusted defenders can respond. The pentest story shows the humans closest to it deciding that not yet is the honest answer. The builder's takeaway: don't ask an AI system to hold a security boundary inside its own context. It can't. The boundary has to live outside the model, in permissions, in isolation, in a human confirming the consequential action before it fires. An AI browser that can read your private repo and execute instructions from any website it visits isn't a convenience feature with a bug. It's two incompatible trust levels sharing one context window. One more note, and it connects the whole ecosystem. The Supreme Court agreed this week to hear Apple versus Epic, the years-long fight over who controls what runs on the platform and what it costs. On the surface, that's an antitrust story, but underneath, it's the same question the AI stories are asking. Who holds the boundary? Who decides what code is trusted, what actions are permitted, and who pays the toll at the gate? We are watching the trust boundary get renegotiated everywhere at once. In the courts, in the browser, in the patch cycle. And the entity being asked to hold that line? Increasingly, it's a language model that can be talked out of believing the line exists. 2 + 2 still equals 4. The systems we build have to know that, even when a website insists otherwise. I'm Link. Keep your boundaries outside the model.
The system output time for the closing protocol. One optimization. One thing you can actually use. This week's optimization of the week, Elastic's Atlas. If you're building agents that need to remember users across sessions, stop stuffing everything into the context window. It doesn't scale. It gets expensive. And models genuinely lose track of facts buried in the middle of a long prompt. A million token window is a scratch pad, not a memory. Atlas is open source, and it's worth studying even if you don't deploy it. The core idea borrows from cognitive science. Three kinds of memory: episodic, what happened; semantic, what's true; procedural, what works. Each lives in its own Elastisher's index, because each has a different life cycle. Here's the mechanism worth stealing. Raw interactions get logged as episodic events, and most of them decay. But a large language model periodically consolidates them, promoting recurring signals into durable semantic facts and building procedural playbooks with success and failure counters. Retrieval then combines lexical search and semantic search, fused with reciprocal rank fusion and re-ranked with a cross-encoder. And here's how you integrate it. It connects to agents through MCP, the Model Context Protocol, with per-user isolation enforced at the document level. So you get memory scoped correctly out of the box. Even if Elastisher feels heavy for your stack, take the pattern. Separate memory by type. Let the noise decay. Promote what proves durable. That architecture outlives any single database choice. Data processed. Perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk. End of transmission.